you're in the 06010.
Catch us every single weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And if you're listening to the audio feed, today's podcast is presented by Geico. You can download Fantasy Focus wherever you get your podcasts. And with that, we say happy Wednesday. Field and Mike hanging out with you. What's going on, Mike Clay?
One app. Make that up?
No, it's like one of our... Wow. You know we do like the company man thing a lot here on the show.
Yeah, I do.
It's like
is this
one
the opposite of the company man.
I mean, it's like everybody says it around ESPN.
I got to be honest.
Yeah. I haven't heard it.
I was just going to say to Field, I've never heard one app, one tab. You should tell somebody about it.
I've heard it.
Thank you, Kyle.
It's not in the notes here, so it's just, I thought maybe you just came up with that.
It's
so.
A frequent promo that you hear like when we're promoing Monday Night Football, some of the special broadcasts that are coming up this preseason, or a UFC fight. Obviously, they're not just on ESPN. They're also available on the ESPN app. One app, one tap. Pretty catchy, though, right?
It's like pretty catchy, like
If you don't already have the ESPN app, we can't be friends. Big show coming up today. We're going to do a double trouble. I don't know that we've ever done
I'm deleting the ESPN app on my phone, for the record.
Just so you could re-download
just
it,
so
right?
Yeah. I want to be friends again, but okay. Also so we, yeah.
Best friends. We're going to do a double trouble today where I don't know that we've ever done just two teams in double trouble. And they weren't from the same division. So we're breaking new ground here on the Fantasy Focus. We've got not just Mike's Philadelphia Eagles, but the Jacksonville Jaguars, one of the trendier teams this season, obviously looking forward to having not just Urban Meyer, but most especially Trevor Lawrence as the leader of that franchise. We're going to get into that in GS a little bit, Mike, but we're going to start with some news. And with that, we begin in Baltimore, where receivers are dropping like flies right now for the Baltimore Ravens. Marquise Brown was already nursing an injury, a hamstring injury that's caused him to miss some time in training camp. Deion Kane's depth-level player. Miles Boykin, who's played a good amount for them, even if not super productive, has played a good amount over the past couple of years. Now Rashad Bateman, one of their two first-round picks, who left practice recently due to a groin injury, was out for a few weeks, or I should say is classified as week-to-week, which often means you'll miss a few weeks. Does this impact the way that you're approaching Rashad Bateman in redrafts this year?
Not really. I mean, he's a late-round flyer, right? I mean, you can get him with your 13th, 14th, 15th round pick right now. So, you know, if he was a super hyped-up rookie and he was going in the 10th round, maybe you drop him down and you don't pick him anymore. But at this point, you're just taking that flyer. You're hoping that, you know, the cream rises, essentially. A phrase I throw around all the time. By the way, I say it all the time.
Yeah.
I said it yesterday, today. Okay.
One app, one tap, cream rises. Everybody knows those, right?
Yeah. Hashtag cream rises. So yeah. I've been using the hashtag for many, many decades. So, many decades? Yes.
You've been alive for?
I was. Back on AIM, I used to do that. AOL, I used to use hashtag.
Yeah. Was that your username? Cream rises?
That was. Cream rises 1798426.
ICQ, normally I would think that's weird, but Mike coming up with numbers off the top of his head is just like the most normal thing.
That really is. Cream rises 1798426. All right.
So anyway, Rashad Bateman, I don't know where we were going with that, but yeah, the point is
doesn't impact things because he was already a late round flyer.
So essentially the Odell Beckham test, right? Like he missed time going into the season his rookie year. There was a ton of depth in front of him. It was not a great situation, but he was super talented. He demanded all that volume. As soon as he jumped on the field, he was a fantasy starter. So if you believe in the talent of Rashad Bateman, take the late flyer, put him on your bench, and we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, there you go. Mike is basically saying that Rashad Bateman's going to be Odell 2.0 as a rookie.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Same thing.
I also noted this when we did our Ravens double trouble preview last week that there have been four instances since Lamar Jackson became the Ravens starting quarterback, four total, where a Ravens wide receiver eclipsed 20 fantasy points in a game. So that could be one of those chicken versus egg situations. Is it that he wasn't playing with wide receivers that were great enough, or is it that the offense is designed in a way that wide receiver opportunities aren't going to be there? Any thoughts?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think it's somewhat schematic, right? Because you think about Greg Roman, and he was with Tyrod Taylor and Colin Kaepernick and Lamar Jackson, a lot of guys that do a lot with their legs, and he's kind of built that offense, right? And it's led to a lot of low volume for wide receivers. So that's what makes me worried about Bateman. I think they will try to throw the ball a little bit more. It won't be as run heavy, but he's still going to scramble a lot. They're still going to be run first, and it's going to mean low volume for the receiver. So he really needs to be the real deal to make up for that with efficiency and touchdowns. And just because he's so talented and a first-round pick, I'm willing to take that chance late in my draft, but I am a little nervous about the volume of the offense.
Just a quick update here. I got an alert saying that John Harbaugh said wide receiver Rashad Bateman will be out for, quote, weeks with a soft tissue injury in his leg. That just came out 1 minute ago. So okay. Coach Harbaugh saying weeks, not necessarily week to week. I don't know if that changes anything from that perspective, but still, if you're looking for a late round flyer in a draft, that's not going to change things once you get to that point in your draft.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's not weeks. Yeah, that's not as much of a different report, right? It was already weeks, now it's weeks. It's just framed differently, I guess. So
rather
I'm not
than
sure.
Week to week,
context,
it's weeks.
Right?
Yeah.
But again, when you're in that part of your draft, you're looking at a lot of similar guys upside. If you want to pivot to Terrace Marshall with Carolina instead, fine. You know, that's fine. These are all upside flyers. You're throwing darts. These are not guys you're going to start in week one anyway. It's guys that you hope can play for you at some point during the season. And maybe the Justin Jefferson or James Robinson, or, you know, that's obviously the ceiling, but a breakout player that gets you to a championship. And he, you know, he has the raw talent to potentially do that at some point this season.
We talked yesterday on the show about the Cowboys and did an entire breakdown of their offense on Double Trouble. Feel free to check that out wherever you get your podcasts. Or rewatch the live stream. That's always available. Fun to go back and revisit those from time to time. And just to update a piece of news that we were sort of expecting at some point soon, Amari Cooper has been taken off the PUP list. A reminder that when a player is taken off the PUP list, it doesn't mean like automatically a back to 100% full strength and everything is hunky-dory and no need to worry about the injury he was dealing with at all. It just is an indication that he's trending in the right direction, and it precludes the possibility of a player missing 6 weeks to begin the year. I think that could come into play with Michael Thomas as an example, as Michael Thomas could very well remain on the PUP list once regular season roster cutdowns take place at the end of this month. This was not in the note, but just I thought kind of interesting, Mike. Yesterday, the NFL did alert teams that the IR rules that existed last year, and you may recall them. Last year, the NFL allowed teams to place an unlimited number of players on injured reserve, and they only had to miss 3 games last season. So, obviously, what ended up happening was that you had teams placing players on IR left and right. Previously, if you wanted to have a player return from IR, it was only a maximum, I believe, 2 during the season, and he had to miss at least 8 weeks. So, just this year, expect that we'll see a lot of bouncing back and forth, and be mindful of that as you're managing your IR spot during the season.
Yeah, 100%. I think the actionable information here for commissioners is if you added an extra IR slot to your league last year, same rules, keep it. You know, keep it for another year. And honestly, if you weren't happy with your settings and you wanted another one, add another one for this year. Now's your chance to do it. Again, the rules will be the same, so you should kind of play it out like you did last season.
Yeah, and by the way, I agree on that. And we'll see if I could see that sticking around forever. It sounded like teams really were advocates for it, which you get, right? I mean, roster flexibility is often hard to come by in the NFL. Anything that affords you a bit more roster flexibility is a good thing. Got a couple of quarterback situations that feel like timeshares for the moment. Let's start in Indianapolis, because we got a little bit of an update this morning from Chris Mortensen reporting that the team has some optimism that both Carson Wentz and Quentin Nelson will be available in week one. Each of them underwent the exact same foot surgery about a week ago, 24 hours apart. It was a weird situation with Carson Wentz, not a frequently seen surgery. And then 24 hours later, his teammate, the best guard in football, has the exact same procedure. And that is good news. So I think if we get news that runs counter to Wentz being available in week one, we can break down what, if any, implications there are for Sam Ehlinger versus Jacob Eason. But for now, it seems like Wentz is going to be good. And I want to revisit something, because I wish that when we did the Colts Double Trouble, and I know you weren't part of that show, I wish I was more of an advocate for Jonathan Taylor. And I think that what's happening with sometimes in fantasy football, we always say that the two rules that matter most, or the two factors you're looking for most, are opportunity and talent, right? But sometimes when circumstances get a little bit murky, we forget about the talent a little bit. And I think Jonathan Taylor might be one of those cases. A lot of concerns about whether the offensive line will be healthy beginning of the season. They've dealt with not just the injury to Quentin Nelson, but Eric Fisher probably won't be available until early in the season. Ryan Kelly, their center, has been banged up. They've been routinely playing backup linemen. And also the fact that if Carson Wentz isn't in there, you expect teams to say, hey, we're going to load the box and sort of dare you to beat us with the run. I'm here now to say that, like, I wish I flexed more confidence behind Jonathan Taylor. I thought about this. I went back and found as many clips as I could from Jonathan Taylor last year. The dude just freaking good, man. I just wish I were a little bit more passionate about my belief in Jonathan Taylor when we did Double Trouble.
I'm with you. I love getting the discounts on situations like that. Same thing with Saquon Barkley. I mean, yeah. I just did a draft, our Apex draft we do, and it's an experts league. We have a lot of fun with it. Every year it's super competitive, and I picked 10th, 12-team league. Barkley at 10, Taylor coming around the corner. Daniel, I'll take that all day long. Yes, is there a little risk in there? Sure. Am I there to win the league? Yes, I am. And those two guys together for the full season, if they pan out, I mean, that is huge for any team. And look, I'm curious to see now with, you know, the positive news with the Colts and obviously positive news with Barkley too, off the PUP. We don't know for sure what his early season situation will be, but I'm curious to see if the ADP start to rise back up, which would be disappointing because right now you can get such a value there. But I agree with you 100%. I barely moved Taylor, a tiny, tiny bit in my rankings just because the talent. We saw what he did last season. I mean, he struggled and was a part-time player for a big chunk of last season. Well, at least he struggled, right? Once Mac went down, he had to play quite a bit. But Jordan Wilkins was worked in a lot, and he might play a big passing down role. He still ended up, what, sixth in fantasy points at running back?
Fourth.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, he's really good, and you would expect his role to just increase this season. So I'm with you. I'm with you on Taylor.
By the way, it might have been sixth in fantasy points, fourth in rushing yards for Jonathan Taylor last year. But bottom line, I'm a believer in the talent. And I let the moment of the gloom and doom that was surrounding Indianapolis probably overtake my true thoughts on Taylor last week. So now that we have news going in the opposite direction, it reminded me to kind of correct that. So file it away as we discuss the Colts throughout the rest of the preseason. But the 49ers are sort of doing a timeshare thing right now. Not really. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo's the starter, but Kyle Shanahan has opened the door to both of them playing in a game. We saw this a little bit with, like, Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson when Lamar was a rookie. Eventually, cream rises, Daniel, so Lamar Jackson took over as the starter.
You've said that. You say that sometimes.
Yeah, I've been saying it for at least the past 10 minutes. So, it's one of my favorite expressions. But, yes, the 49ers are at least entertaining a two-quarterback system here. Mm-hmm. You buying it or no? I'm not.
Not a two-quarterback system, as in you go into a week and you're playing both guys. I mean, yes, we've seen, you know, Jalen Hurts come in for a carry with the Eagles. We saw Lamar Jackson do it with Joe Flacco. You might get that, right? I have it projected that way, Lance to get a carry here or there. But I will say this. I think it's going to be a one-quarterback system very soon, and it's going to be the guy you traded all the assets for to move up in the draft to get. You don't do that if you don't need a quarterback or if you're happy with your quarterback situation. I'm sorry. History tells us that. If you look at the past decade of first-round quarterbacks, only one did not play as a rookie. That was Jordan Love last season. And almost all of them play within a month, you know, or at least mid-season. Almost all of them are the full-time starter for their team. It's very rare to get past that point. So I think it's going to be pretty quick that we see Trey Lance as your 49ers starting quarterback.
Yeah, no matter what they're saying, the proof will be in the pudding. I think I don't know what week, because no one knows what week. I'm sure the 49ers don't even know what week. It wouldn't stun me, though, if August 31st, Adam Schefter tweets, the 49ers have decided to start Trey Lance. Jimmy Garoppolo will serve as the backup, available for trade, or something to that effect would not surprise me one bit at the end of preseason.
Russell Wilson's a great example.
Russell Wilson is the prime example, but it happens fairly frequently too, right?
I mean, the cream rises, right?
The cream does rise.
Oh my gosh.
Lance is up for it. If he's a better guy, he'll be in there.
Cream will indeed rise. We're going to talk about the Eagles and also the Jaguars as we begin today's Double Trouble.
Double trouble.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
All right, Mike, in Philly, let's begin with Jalen Hurts. And we know that head coach Nick Sirianni in his first year in Philadelphia has stopped short of naming Jalen Hurts the starting quarterback. Mm-hmm. I continue to read that as not that there's any doubt that Jalen Hurts will be the quarterback, simply that this is one of those sort of coach things that often happens, guys wanting to earn their stripes, so to speak. You see like 20 teams right now don't even have helmet decals on. Coaches want players to earn those helmet decals. It's more that vein than anything else. We expect Jalen Hurts to be the starter unless, I know there's a rumor, this has been sort of the rumor mill that Philly could be in play for Deshaun Watson, but if something like that happens, we'll address it later. For now, it's Jalen Hurts' show. How much to read into the four games that happened last year, Mike, and how confident does that make you in Jalen Hurts for this year?
Yeah, I'm up and down on this one, right? First of all, I liked him as a prospect coming in last year, right? Okay. But he fell to the second round, and as I'll get to in a second, history not too fond of that level of pedigree. But look what he did in the three games that he played. 847 passing yards, five passing touchdowns, had 238 rushing yards and a touchdown. He was QB3 in fantasy those 3 weeks, really. The fourth member, he got pulled out of that game. So three full games was the QB3 in fantasy. Now, a lot of people are going to point to his poor efficiency. There's something there. 52% completion rate. The yards per attempt wasn't good. But you need context, right? He was the most aggressive quarterback as a thrower in the NFL last season. Average depth of throw, highest in the league. 13.8 yards per completion was tops at quarterback. So you have to kind of weigh that, right? He was actually maybe a little below average, not horrific in terms of passing efficiency. So keep that in mind. The offensive line will be healthier. That helps. The targets, okay, young. Rager and obviously Smith are very young first and second year players. Good tight ends. The supporting cast around him is okay. But here's what it comes down to for me. Now, again, I told you I was high on Hurts last year. Took him in a lot of dynasty drafts. He was not very expensive as a backup to Carson Wentz. I traded him in all of them this offseason. I got Trevor Lawrence in one, packaged him for another player and another one. I can't remember who it was. But I moved on, and I'll tell you why. I looked at my top 25 dynasty wide receivers or dynasty quarterbacks. Okay. Top 25, and maybe you disagree with the order, but essentially if you did it or anyone else at home did it, it would be roughly the same 25 guys, right?
Okay.
21 were first round picks. I mean, think about that. The quarterbacks that are exceptions, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, and Jalen Hurts. I mean, that matters. Like the NFL is good at scouting quarterbacks, you know? I mean, I know that some of the early first round guys don't pan out, but
yeah.
When it comes down to it, the guys that end up as franchise quarterbacks and starters in this league for a long time are almost always first round picks.
Right.
That's just the way it works. It's hard to be an exception. And look, pedigree isn't everything, field, but it matters to me. And there's just not a good resume of second round picks. There's a reason he fell that far. And that bothers me a little bit.
Yeah, I would say what's more concerning for me for his dynasty value is the fact that I don't think that the speculation surrounding Deshaun Watson is just smoke. I think there's something potentially there with Deshaun Watson and Philly. It may just happen next offseason when, as we know, Philly is equipped with potentially three first-round picks. Philly fans are obviously very excited that Carson Wentz could be back as soon as week one because they need him to play at least 75% of the snaps or 70% of the snaps in Indy to make the playoffs to get that first-round pick from Philly. So, from Indy. All right, so separate and apart from the dynasty value, though, you talked about a lot of the favorable stats. In four games last year, he had four starts. He had 46 rushing attempts. Yeah. It was 18, 11, 9, and 8. Hopefully my math is correct right there, but I'm pretty sure that was the specific number by week. So despite the fact that it was declining still, the floor was 8, and that was a game in which, as we all remember, he left early against Washington. They put in Nate Sudfeld. We can parse out whether that was smart or not at a different time. But he also had two 340-plus yard passing efforts in those four starts, right? To your point, Mike, he had the was it back-to-back weeks with bombs to Deshaun Jackson? At least one of them was to Deshaun Jackson. Like, he could certainly chuck it way down the field, and they have a potential elite deep threat in Devontae Smith. So there's reasons to believe that the vertical presence will be there too. Yeah, and I just say this, is that, so he had 11.5 rushes in those four starts. Just some context. The top three rushing quarterbacks on a attempt per game basis last year, number one, Lamar at 10.6. Number two, Cam, 9.1. Number three, Kyler, 8.3. As we've discussed recently with Cam, in basically worst-case scenario, he was quarterback 16 on a points-per-game basis last year. I think that the rushing floor is just so freaking high with Jalen Hurts that I have him ranked as quarterback 11, and I feel like the range for Jalen Hurts, I don't think his ceiling is on par with some of the quarterbacks that can do it, both Josh Allen types or Lamar Jackson types or Dak Prescott or Russell Wilson's. But I also think the floor is significant enough that I'm going to have him ahead of perhaps better passers. And I think it's no slight at Jalen Hurts to say that a Matthew Stafford's a better passer than him. Maybe even a Matt Ryan's a better passer than him right now. That I think at that range of like 8 to 12 feels pretty appropriate for Jalen Hurts if he plays all 17 games.
And I think that's fine. I think earlier in the offseason, there was a little too much hype there. He's kind of settled in a little bit. Yeah. So now you could take that chance, right? Because you're not crushing your team by taking Jalen Hurts and expecting top five numbers. Yeah. You know, So he's kind of fallen down a little bit. I'm at QB12, so not far off, but I just wanted to stress that point because we don't know for sure if he's a good NFL quarterback. He may get benched at some point if he's not up to the task, right? So just keep that in mind when you're selecting your quarterback.
We'll talk about their running back, Miles Sanders, in just a moment. I think we see it pretty comparably on Jalen Hurts. But first, forge your NFL dynasty in Madden NFL 22 with new franchise features that deliver even more control. Manage your coaching staff and upgrade them with new talents. Devise a new game plan for every opponent with in-depth weekly strategy. Experience the ups and downs of a real NFL season with the enhanced season engine. Madden NFL 22. Game day happens here. Pre-order now.
Do you own or rent your home?
Sure, yep. You do.
Yeah, I'll bet it can be real hard work too, huh, Field? Having me come over all the time to fix everything that goes wrong in your house? Well,
that's,
you know what's
not
easy?
A lie.
Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing, too, because I already have so much to do around Field's house. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All right, back with Miles Sanders chatter, and he was RB17 in terms of points per game last year, Mike, at just over 14. He played in 12 games. He had 164 carries for 867 yards. Interesting player and sometimes interesting to rank. Daniel's highest, most optimistic on him at running back 15. I have him at RB19. You have him at RB17. I believe Matthew's a little bit later. But his ADP is RB17, late fourth round. So we're kind of all in that ballpark for Miles Sanders. I think at times, Mike, the extremes are too significant for Miles Sanders. There are people that say, like, this guy could be easily a top five running back in fantasy, and there are others who say, like, he's nothing more. Or Philly will never commit to him full-time, especially with the coach, that his history as an offensive coordinator was very much running back by committee. I kind of feel like we've settled in the right spot on Miles Sanders as a late back-end RB2.
Yeah, and I think I'm kind of mid-pack. I'm 17th. That's about right, I guess. But I'm more optimistic than most,
wow.
Right?
Hold on. First off, I'm 17th. That's about right, I guess, is just like being like, yeah, my ranking is obviously
the one
that's correct.
No, that's not what I meant.
No, I meant what he says.
No, we get it, right?
Yes, he will finish exactly 17th. Okay, you're way too high. You're way too low. Okay, that's right. Anyway, I'm wearing an Eagle shirt. I think I would know.
That's fair. All right.
But anyway,
yes.
Before you rudely interrupted, look, he's trending the wrong way, right? He's being drafted later in 12-team leagues. I've seen him fall to the fourth round, which is surprising to me for a guy who last season played 11 full games, and the volume wasn't too bad, right?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
14.1 carries, 4.6 targets per game. He was RB11 in fantasy points those weeks, so that's fine. Yes, they may want to spread it out a little bit in the backfield, but... It's probably an offense that's going to run more than Doug Peterson's offenses did, right? They lean more toward the pass. I think this new offense will lean more toward the run. So that should be plenty of volume for him. He was second in yards per carry last year. He didn't want to get too caught up in that, but he's a big play running back, right? He's
three separate 70-plus yard runs last year for Miles Sanders.
He can do that. That's part of his game, so he's going to bring that to the table. And he struggled a bit as a receiver last year, but who didn't in that offense? As a rookie, he was seventh at running back in receiving yards, right?
Sure.
So he brings that to the table as well. The O-line will be healthy now. Again, I think they'll lean toward the run. I think there's reason for optimism with Sanders, and I'm not worried about like Boston Scott stealing a ton of work from him, right?
Yeah,
he's clearly their best talent at that position. So I'm optimistic about him, more optimistic than where his ADP is right now.
But his ADP is where you have him ranked as well. Like I just sort of feel like he's appropriately ranked, right? Because I don't think his workload's ever going to be consistently 20 carries and 4 to 5 catches per game, like where you hope that someone like Dalvin Cook might be, right? Like that top tier, the elite tier. He's a talented guy. He's super explosive. He can catch the ball. I'm not super concerned about like one other running back in the backfield, but I do think there's a chance that a couple of guys play a factor, whether it's a little bit of Boston Scott, a little bit of, crazy as it sounds, Jordan Howard stealing some goal line work, things of that nature. And as you mentioned, a little bit of receiving issues last year and fumbling issues last year. He fumbled 4 times. I really think he lost 2 of them. Like, those are the kind of things that can get you in the doghouse quickly. But, like, he's going to end up being, like, he's going to, if like, I don't know about zero RB, but if you are wide receiver heavy with the Travis Kelce in there early, I'm okay with walking away with him as my top running back.
Yeah, and I'll just say, with his ADP, you know, it depends kind of who you're drafting with. Right, like I think across the United States of America, he's kind of trending the other direction. ESPN people are smart, though. They're still drafting him at 17th where he belongs, but maybe some other places he's not. So if you're with your buddies at your league, they might be reading some reports about him, and he's trending the wrong way. He can get a discount in round four. So I'm keeping an eye on him, but I like him. I found myself drafting him.
Okay, yeah. I'm in on Miles Sanders, too. I think just like he's just a solid running back in both real life and fantasy. He'll be good for you this year if you do wind up taking him in the fourth round because the cream rises on ESPN. All right, Devontae Smith leads the pass catchers in Philly, at least in name and excitement level right now, although as of this podcast, he is still nursing an MCL injury, expected to be 2 to 3 weeks from when the initial injury took place, which is about a week or so ago, so we're looking at maybe another week or two before he returns. I mean, Mike, there's really no words to describe how remarkable he was during his final season in Alabama. Special doesn't do it justice. Incredible doesn't do it justice. Record setting is an understatement. The guy was amazing. The question in the pre-draft process was how much of that would translate at the NFL level. Are there any concerns for you at all for Devontae Smith?
I mean, we haven't seen someone really be a dominant NFL receiver at 175 pounds, right? I mean, that's really the criticism. Yeah. But I more buy into the actual production, right? You know, he could be a unicorn. Sure. I mean, he was in college, over 1,800 yards and 23 touchdowns.
Ridiculous.
Just last season when he won the Heisman. The ball skills, the speed, the quickness, the route running, the hands. I mean, this guy really has it all. So I'm excited for him. You know, and man, we were talking about this before the show. 298 targets the past three seasons, 6 drops. I mean, just incredible hands.
Catch, yeah.
He catches everything. And the one thing I'll say about his short-term value, and by the way, top 10 wide receivers in fantasy, if they don't get hurt, money in the bank. I mean, they've pretty much all been top 30 receivers. I believe the only one over the past decade that wasn't was Tavon Austin. I mean, everyone else that's played 13-plus games, top 30 fantasy receiver. So that's, you love that. There was three picked in the top 10 this year, of course, with Waddle, Chase, and Smith. But, you know, last year, one of the things we always said when we talked about Justin Jefferson was, of all the rookie receivers, who was the clearest path to a huge target share and every down snaps? And it was Jefferson. I'm not saying Smith's going to translate, you know, do exactly what he did, copycat that sort of production. But the answer is Smith this year. He is the clearest path to a number one role, a ton of targets. And, you know, obviously his quarterback situation will have something to do with his efficiency, but he has that path for sure.
Yeah, he certainly does, especially if you look at the other wide receivers in Philadelphia. Travis Fulgham was really fun last year for like that 6-game stretch, whatever it was, 5 games. He was unbelievable.
Then he disappeared.
But then the other player that needs to be mentioned here, Mike, and I like reclamation projects, and I'm not even sure that calling Jalen Reagor a reclamation project is fair. The guy's played 1 year in the NFL. Mm-hmm. He got hurt. He ended up on IR last year for at least part of the season. He barely had any exposure last season, Mike. It was just desperate times in Philly last year. There was drama with the head coach. There was drama with the quarterback. Neither one of those men is there anymore. It was a disjointed offense, injuries along the offensive line, injuries in the backfield, injuries at wide receiver. Everything that could go wrong last year in Philadelphia did go wrong. So there's a slim, not even a slim, there's some hope here for Jalen Reagor. You study this team as closely as, well, you study all the NFL teams closely, but obviously you're an Eagles fan. Do you have any confidence in Jalen Reagor? This could be a bounce back year.
I do. I like him at his ADP. I found myself drafting him late here or there. This was not a player I was high on in the pre-draft process, but wide receivers are historically tough. You know, I found, like, for example,
corners
personally,
and wide receivers.
What's that?
Corners and wide receivers. I
would,
really hard.
Like, I feel like I do a good job like finding running backs and, you know, who's going to be good, who's not. You know, we all miss, but wide receiver's tough. It really is. So anyway, I was kind of low on him. I didn't like his efficiency at the college level. Last year, to your point, zero top 30 weeks doesn't make you feel good at all. But he did some good things, right? I mean, if you look at yards after the catch, he was 11th at wide receiver. So when he got the ball, he made some plays. And also, to your point about quarterback play, his off-target rate was 26%. That was fourth highest among wide receivers. So he didn't really have a chance on a lot of those balls thrown his way. So keep that in mind. To your point, he missed 5 games as well. But he's also really young. He's only 22. So even for a second-year receiver, very young player, should play every down role. It's going to be a 60-snap player with a 20% target share. And if he gets that, he's probably going to be a top 35-ish wide receiver, maybe top 40. So if he stays healthy and sees that sort of volume. So I'm interested in the 12th round of 12-team leagues. That's about where he's going. Sure.
Yeah. Can I ask a real quick question? And please. I know we're going to get to the tight ends here in a second as a part of this, but Jalen Reagor is the fourth or fifth option if you consider Jalen Hurts' legs as an option on this offense. Is that fair?
Reagor is?
Yeah.
No,
Dallas Goedert, Miles Sanders, Devontae Smith,
In terms of targets, I think he'll be second. I think with Ertz there, they'll kind of he'll steal a couple from
cannibalize each other. Yeah,
from Goddard a little bit. I still think they'll have a pretty high target share to the tight end position, which we'll talk about shortly. But I could see it being like 24% Smith if he pans out, 19% Rager, 17% Goddard, 14% Ertz, that kind of thing. Maybe like 11-12% Sanders. That's kind of the distribution there.
My favorite part about Mike Clay is that I think those numbers, those percentages, truly were in his head. He's not just like making them up on the spot.
Not totally. At all. No. Yeah. I mean, no. I do projections year round, as people know that follow me on Twitter. They're always there. That. So I'm looking at that stuff every single day.
Mike Clay NFL on Twitter, if you're not following him, really the joke is on you. So what I'm realizing, and I realize this every August, is that you know, we go through all these different wide receivers, and a lot of them fall in this big category, right? So I don't know that I'm here to tell you Jalen Reagor is better than this other late-round flyer that we've discussed in recent days. More of the context is that I think he's fast. Mike said he's young. I think he's got some toughness. I know it's been a tough training camp for him so far, at least by some accounts. So not really necessarily prioritizing him, but he's going to be one of those names that if you're looking for, as Mike noted, a potential number two target in his own offense, he would fit that bill.
Oh, yeah. I love them late round high pedigree talents. First and second year guys, whether it's a rookie or think about it like a DJ Chark or maybe Tyler Boyd was year three. But those kind of guys, right? If they're really talented, they're drafted early, they still have a shot, a path to touches, take a late flyer. Those guys, they hit. Those are the guys that hit.
So we got two tight ends in Philly for right now. It's no mystery that Zach Ertz would prefer to play elsewhere. It's also no mystery that Philly does not want to trade him without getting something back in return. Problem is, Zach Ertz is due a lot of money for a guy that's not play well last year, and I believe he feels like he deserves a new contract. And I'm not here to dog Zach Ertz. The guy's been an unbelievable player for a long time. Another example of a guy who had everything go wrong last season that could go wrong. But with the two tight ends in Philly, it's hard to plant your flag on either of them as a lock-it-in difference maker at the position, which for many years Zach Ertz was. But we clearly have a preferred target amongst these two. It's Dallas Goedert, tight end 9 for me, 8 for you, 7 for Daniel. So in descending order right there, his ADP is tight end 8, Mike. Good player. Solid target share last year when he did play. Has missed some time over his first two seasons, but good, solid player. The limiting factor is just that Zach Ertz could bounce back, maybe not to where he was 3 years ago, but bounce back to a closer version to himself. And all of a sudden, you've got Dallas Goedert splitting targets with yet another tight end.
Yeah, I'd feel better about him if Ertz was not there, obviously. But he did see pretty generous targets even when Ertz played last season. So you like to see that. He played at least 80% of the snaps in 9 games last season. Tight end 3. In fantasy points, so just under 7 targets per game. You know, he's been top 11 in fantasy points per game at tight end each of the past 2 seasons. It should be a tight end friendly scheme, we would think, coming from, you know, this scheme in Indianapolis certainly was. Philadelphia has been in the past, and you would imagine would be now. So I think he is now their certified number one, which he never was in past years. He's already produced in fantasy. I think it's his job. So I think even with Ertz there in a reduced role from the past, he'll still play a lot. I mean, they don't have a really locked in number 3 receiver right now, so I still think it's going to be a lot of 2 tight end packages out on the field. I still think he can overcome that and be, again, tight end 7, 8, 9, finish right in that range.
Yeah, and I just think the upside is sort of limited if you have Ertz there as well. Like, from sort of breaking through that glass ceiling and getting into the tier of a, let's say, not a Kelsey or a Kittle or a Waller, but in that sort of next little pocket of tight ends, maybe a Mark Andrews type that could have 8 or 9 touchdown upside every single season. What's your guess on the Eagles' record this year, Mike? What do you think?
It takes a while now because you have
5.8 and 11.2 or something.
No, it's 7.4, but you have to think about what the other.
Right.
So it's not 7 and 9 now. It'd be 7, 7 and 10.
7.4, 9.6.
Yeah, 9.6.
God, I love Mike so much.
There it is.
Let's talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars. Really interesting team this year. They've undergone significant change this offseason. They had, of course, the first overall pick of Trevor Lawrence, made the job as desirable as pretty much any that became available this offseason, and it feels fitting to start with Trevor Lawrence, who right now, Mike, is being ranked accordingly. I have him at quarterback 13, you have him at quarterback 14, Daniel has him at quarterback 15. Talked a lot about my quote-unquote guys list this year, and I thought about putting Trevor Lawrence on my guys list. However, I'm reserving that right in case Trey Lance or Justin Fields is named the starter for his team, because, and not that Trevor Lawrence is a bad runner, he's a very good runner, but I think there's a chance that Trey Lance and Justin Fields, who are a bit more dynamic, or definitely more dynamic as athletes, could have more design runs go in their favor. I'm sort of holding a rookie quarterback spot for either one of them on the guys list, but really excited about Trevor Lawrence. He is, and this is not hyperbole, is regarded as the best prospect in at least 9 years since Andrew Luck. Some people think he's the best prospect since John Elway back in 83. There's so much to be excited about right now in Jacksonville.
No question about it. I'm super pumped. I mean, just look at, first of all, he has a size and a huge arm, right? He's prototypical size. He has the production. 40 games at Clemson, 90 touchdowns, 17 picks.
90.
Unbelievable.
40 games.
Also, and to your point about rushing, and I think this is kind of important, right? Because if you're in that range, right, like 12, 13, 14, you want to take a shot on a quarterback, you probably want a guy that can run the ball, right? Yeah. So let's talk about that, because 776 yards, 17 touchdowns on the ground the past two seasons.
Keep in mind this, by the way, and not that they were facing a ton of stiff competition, but in college, statistics, if you take a sack for 8 yards, that subtracts from your rushing total as a quarterback, too. So that number is probably closer to maybe 900 or 1,000
yards.
Exactly
right. You're exactly right. So I looked back a little history here. So 2010 to 2020, 8 quarterbacks were picked first overall, right? So think about all that pedigree going first overall. 3 finishes top 10 fantasy quarterbacks: Cam Newton, Andrew Luck, Kyler Murray.
Yep.
All 3 had at least 255 rushing yards, and none of the other 5 reached 255. So all 3 that got there were top 10 fantasy quarterbacks. Can Trevor Lawrence get there is the question. The answer is absolutely he can get there. He has that ability. So that should give you, make you feel a little better about his floor. And also, as we're going to get to here, pretty good supporting cast. You know, not to mention their defensive struggles. They focus their assets on the draft, on a couple offensive players as well, especially in the early rounds. You know, I think they're going to have to play catch up. They're going to have to move the football. A lot's going to be on his arm as a rookie. He's going to scramble. He's going to run. I think there's a chance for him to be a QB1 as a rookie.
Yeah, he's tempting, that's for sure. He certainly is tempting because of the history, the talent, obviously, and as we'll discuss right now, pretty good players around him, which includes his teammate Travis Etienne. Now, when Urban Meyer took over this job, if you were to look at all the needs across the Jacksonville roster, there were a lot of them. One of them that you might have felt like positionally was not a need was running back. James Robinson was an incredible undrafted rookie free agent this past season. He was amazing. 15 games played, double-digit fantasy points in all of those games, double-digit carries in all those games. He was incredible. That being said, they did use a first-round pick on Travis Etienne. What do we make of this backfield right now in Jacksonville?
Well, first of all, man, I remember hearing the words Travis Etienne come out of the mouth of the commissioner to go to Jacksonville. I was not happy about that. For either guy, for Robinson or Etienne, you wanted to see both of these guys find their way to a feature back role. So they're going to steal touches from each other. There's no question about it. But you look at Etienne here. You know, I have him 24th on my board. I have Robinson at 28. So, look, Etienne, super talented, explosive, good receiving chops. You know, I loved his post-contact and forced missed tackle production. Just incredible, super productive at Clemson, high-end prospect. But, Daniel, I'm going to turn to you now here.
Yeah.
You know, this is a guy that can do it all. He can catch the ball, run the ball. I just don't know if he's going to have more than, say, 30% of the carries this season. It's going to be a lot of passing game volume.
I think that's really the question for me is, and I know if you'll tee this up, the idea that James Robinson did so well last year and got so much volume. I mean, that was obviously a big part of what made him so good for us was that volume. But that volume's probably not going to be there given that passing work going to Etienne and the idea that, and we just talked about this, you don't draft a kid in the first round and not play him. Right. It doesn't make a difference at that point. You know that they want to get him touches. So how are you looking at Robinson then, you know, understanding that you like Etienne? Are you completely avoiding Robinson? Is he being drafted a little bit too late? Should he be going a little bit earlier?
You know what? I was low on him at first. I'm starting to creep up a little bit just because reports are kind of that Robinson looks really good. He's clearly in camp working as their number one guy. He's going to be their primary rusher. So there might be enough room for him. And also they're focusing on throwing the football to the running backs, which is key. So you look at, I have a projected 180 carries and 40 receptions for Robinson, 143 carries, 56 receptions for Etienne. So again, 24th on my board for Etienne, 28th for James Robinson. you know, Robinson was really good last season, but again, he played 70% of the snaps when he was healthy. That's going to come down a little bit. And also, he was over his head in the touchdown department. Had 10 touchdowns. His expected total was just under 6, too. So that'll come down. But again, he's going to get most of the – he'll have a leg up for carries for sure on this team. Get the goal line work. Targets will come down a little bit. ETN will handle a lot of that passing down work, but they're gonna focus on this position. So ETN's my preferred choice. Little rich at his ADP. Robinson about right now where he's going. That's where I've kind of settled. I'm not going out of my way to get either guy. It's going to be hard for them to have a high ceiling.
A high ceiling, yeah. 40.5% of Robinson's fantasy points in 2020 came from receiving. And when you add a guy like ETN, you know that's just going to get taken away. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have them, like I said, 96 combined catches. That would be around 7th or 8th in the league last season for running backs alone. So it's not a huge number. It's not like they can't get there. So I think it's possible that they're both flex options.
Okay.
It's probably the best way to put it in PPR.
Flex options, but with ETN being the one you prefer the most.
Exactly. But you just worry about ceiling. Then again, if one guy gets hurt, though, look out. I mean, it's going to be, especially if this offense is playing decent, they're, you know, the sky's the limit.
All right, real quickly before we move on. Any chance that you're like, you know what, I'm just going to grab both of these guys and just get Jacksonville running back?
I don't like to do that.
Okay.
I really don't, because you have to pick one, right?
You do. Every week you got to choose one to start, and the idea of like, if one of them gets hurt, great, you've got the guy. But you're every week it's that, who do I want to play here? How do I choose the right one? Which one do I know is
going to
have the good game?
Yeah, and they're going too early for one to be an insurance back, right? It's not like you're just going to take ETN, start him every week, and have Robinson just sitting on your bench.
Fair.
And then you're going to be tempted to put him in your lineup, and then you're going to watch the game, and one of them will score, that's great, but the other guy's like not getting any points. Like you're gonna hurt yourself. If they're the best value on the board, I still probably wouldn't.
Okay, I like it.
Like if you take ETN and Robinson's the next guy, I might pivot to receiver or something
else.
And you could do that at that point in your draft, right? Like there's gonna be so much value. It's so early that you don't need to force yourself or be like, man, Robinson's here in the 13th round. It's never gonna happen, right? He's gonna go in like the 5th round or 6th round. So that's just you're not in a position where you have to take both.
Sure, that's fair. All right, before we talk about wide receivers and close the podcast out, we're going to do a quick word from two of our friends, first being from Oars and Alps. DeAndre Hopkins elevates his game on the field, which is why he is a top fantasy football choice this year. But off the field, he elevates his skincare game with Oars and Alps. Oars and Alps is a premium men's skincare brand that provides powerful, natural-derived skincare with real results. Oars and Alps products are carefully formulated to support an active lifestyle and is a preferred top choice for athletes like all-pro wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins. As someone who believes in self-care and has a regular skincare routine, I promise you that I do. I've been a fan of Oars and Alps for a while now, and not just because they provide high-quality skincare products that are perfect for the on-the-go lifestyle, but also because of what they stand for. Okay, Oars and Alps has been working on their SPF formula for 4 years to bring you the best possible SPF line that they could make. It's free of harsh chemicals, it's easy to use, and it's specifically designed for those that are active. And right now, ESPN Fantasy Football listeners can receive a free hydrating antioxidant SPF 50 spray, which was named Men's Health Best Sunscreen of 2021. Wow.
Nailed it.
When you buy any two Oars and Alps best-selling products, all you need to do is visit oarsandalps.com/fantasyfootball. That's oarsandalps.com/fantasyfootball and follow the instructions.
Daniel, I have a question for you.
Yeah, buddy.
You want to get in shape, but you're having trouble staying motivated?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Make 5-hour energy shots part of your lifestyle and get the energy boost you need to get fit. We all know you sometimes do not want to go to the gym.
What do you mean we all know? Everyone knows I sometimes don't want to go to the gym.
Everyone knows this. We talk about this in private text messages.
Got it. All right.
But here's the thing. We're going to help you out. We've talked about this. We've consulted.
How you can do it?
Here's what you got to do. You have to take 5-hour energy. Take a shot to give you the feeling and alertness so you can get to the gym. With zero sugar and a convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick-me-up for getting stuff done. The 5-hour energy website has flavors galore. Oh, man. My mouth's watering here. Watermelon, tropical burst, cherry, peach, mango, and more. There's a flavor for everyone, even you, Daniel. Try them all. On the site, you even have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack. You choose the flavors, and it's delivered right to your door. If you go to 5hourenergy.com, that is the number 5hourenergy.com, and get some 5-Hour Energy product today. You can use my promo code FFF to receive 10% off your order. This offer is only valid until September 30th. on one order and cannot be used with any other promotions. The code is not good on subscription orders. Go to 5hourenergy.com today.
Can you imagine a 24-pack of 5-Hour Energy, Mike? I could get so much done if I ordered one of those. I would be the most efficient. I'd probably be Field Yates is honestly what I would probably be
if
I had.
You could fix his house and be as good an analyst and break NFL news.
What?
And get to the gym.
How incredible.
Think about all that stuff
and,
you could pull
off. That's incredible. How
about that? Is that possible? Hello, thanks for handling that, Daniel. Yeah, you got a moment here. Let's keep talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Wide receivers. Let's do it.
Let's talk about DJ Chark, who I kind of think, Mike, is maybe being underrated coming into this season. I kind of feel like we're going to talk about two receivers from the Jaguars in that vein. But DJ Chark, I wonder if we have to think more about 2019 than we do 2020 mm-hmm. with Chark, who in 2019 was one of the breakout stars in the NFL. Remember, that was his second season? Was your guy going that year?
Yeah, so Fantasy Football Now, week one. Remember that?
I remember this.
The question was, who's the guy on waivers you want that needs to be on rosters?
And that was it.
And I bought a jersey because I was so excited that that one panned out. I mean, they don't all pan out, so you feel good when they do, right?
No, and again, we've been talking about this more. We're not looking necessarily for the James Robinson calls every year. We're looking for more the DJ Chark calls or the players who go from really good to great year over year. And those are the ones that often are the most useful in fantasy. But back in 2019, a star, over 1,000 receiving yards, nearly 14 yards per catch. I believe it was 8 touchdowns that year, Mike. It regressed last season. 53 catches, 706 yards, and 5 touchdowns. Do I think there's a chance that... Well, let me ask you this. Who do you think is the most talented wide receiver on Jacksonville's roster? Do you think it's clearly Chark?
Raw talent, raw athlete talent. I think it's someone else we're going to talk about, LaVisca Chenault.
Okay, so I gotcha. The reason why I ask is that, like, if you think Chark is the clear-cut number one guy on this offense in terms of talent at wide receiver, it's no stretch at all to imagine a scenario where DJ Chark goes back to 1,000 yards in a single season.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it. I have him 36th on my board. I mean, keep in mind, last season he also had the third highest off-target rate among wide receivers, too.
Bad,
so the quarterback issues were a problem for him. But again, he's still 24. You know, my case for him in 2019 was this is a guy with unbelievable speed, who's 6'3". It was a second-round pick. I mean, and has a path to volume in this offense. You know, there it wasn't hard to see on paper why he was a breakout candidate. And you stand by that. I mean, he's still only 24 years old. He should bounce back. He'll be healthier, hopefully, this season. And he's still in a position for a respectable target share, even with some of these other guys we're going to talk about in the offense. So maybe he doesn't have the ceiling to jump all the way up to 17th like he was. But where he's being drafted now, and he's trending down a little bit, you could perhaps grab him, and he could be a wide receiver 3, maybe a flex option.
I think he's being way underrated this year, and I guess my ranking is not totally reflective of that. I have him at wide receiver 33, and I think what you find with wide receivers is that there are a lot of players that feel underrated when you look at their ranking, but then you're reminded of the depth of talent at wide receiver this year. But he's somebody, like, he's going to be one of my favorite values then in drafts, currently going wide receiver 37, as we discussed. I think there's a lot of upside here for TJ Chark because of the quarterback play, because of the raw ability, because of the fact that while defensively they should be a little bit better this year, not necessarily expecting them to look like the Rams last year that are holding teams down with the clamps and they can win grind out games 21-17 or 24-21. It's going to have to be winning with touchdowns frequently, and that could include some junk time as well. So I'm optimistic about DJ Chark. So let's talk about LaVisca Chenault next, Mike, because you kind of teased how you believe he's the most talented of the wide receivers. Interesting player, right? Misses some time or recovers from an injury. I believe it was a core injury after he gets drafted last year in the second round out of Colorado. He ends up playing 14 games last year. He averages just over 10 yards per reception on 58 catches. Kind of a gadget player last year. He had 18 rushing attempts as well, Mike. What's the ceiling? What is the avenue to a breakout year for LaVisca Chenault?
Well, here's the thing, and part of the reason why I'm not super on Chark this year is because he's going in roughly the sixth round of 12-teamer. Chenault's going 2 rounds later, and I have Chenault ranked higher.
Okay.
So we might need a side bet here because you guys are both higher on Chark, so we maybe should have a little bit of fun with this one because I am in on Chenault. I think he's an absolute steal in the eighth round. My ultimate draft board article comes out next week right around the marathon. And needless to say, he will be highlighted in that piece. So I'm trying to get him wherever I can. Look, last season, 58 catches, 600 yards, 5 touchdowns. Also had 91 rushing yards. And look, he missed action during the season. He was a part-time player for quite a while last year, and he still put up a pretty darn good receiving line. And here's the thing. Receiver, in terms of fantasy points in PPR, he was 46th, and that includes the weeks he missed, right? So he finished 46th last year. That was only a 56% snap share. Some receivers play 85, 90, 95%, so that could go up a lot higher. His ADP right now is floating around wide receiver 40. So he finished 46th in that role. He's going 40th. It doesn't add up for me for a second-round pick and just a crazy good athlete, right? So I think he makes a big leap this season. And by the way, I know it's a new scheme now, new coaching staff, but after week 13, 8.3 targets per game. He started to flourish in that final month. I think he picks up where he left off and breaks out big time this year.
Yeah, so do you wonder if they're going to utilize him comparably to how he was utilized last year, or do you think that new system, new vision, because last year the lack of deep targets was apparent, and that will be limiting to his fantasy value this year, right? I mean, he only had 8 targets last year on throws that traveled 20 or more yards in the air. It's hard to, like, if you're going to be averaging 10 yards a catch, just do the math, like 10, 11 yards per catch, you got to have 85, 90 catches just to hit 1,000 yards for a season.
And I think he could catch 90 footballs.
Interesting.
Right? Even if he stays in that role. However, reports are they want to utilize him more as a traditional wide receiver. So the carries could go down, the targets up. And I actually feel pretty good about that, especially with Etienne and Robinson in the backfield. You want Chenault to be on the field in the slot or outside. And I assume he'll be in the slot quite a bit. So to your point, probably a lot of short to intermediate range looks because you'll have Chark on the outside and Marvin Jones on the other side.
Fun group of pass catchers.
No doubt.
We've already discussed. They have a huge, huge, huge hole at tight end right now. I mean, just a gaping hole at tight end. But they do have a third wide receiver who could emerge, Mike, and that's Marvin Jones, who last year, believe it or not, finishes wide receiver 18. He was wide receiver 26 in points per game. Maybe I have that wrong, but anyways, 14.2 points per game last year for Marvin Jones. That's correct. He was wide receiver 18 in terms of total points for the year. So, as usual, typical sort of finishes better than you remember Marvin Jones' season, Mike. But he's not ranked by any of the people in this room right now. Matthew has a wide receiver 41. Why, for you, does he fall outside your top 50 wide receivers?
Well, I mean, to your point, he finished 18th, but he was third at wide receiver in routes overall.
In the entire NFL.
He was third in pass routes at wide receiver. Finished 18th in fantasy points. He was the line's number one wide receiver. He now may be third in line. I mean, who knows? Maybe he'll be first in targets in Jacksonville. It's possible, but I don't think he will be with Chark there. And, of course, I'm very high on LaVisca Chenault. You know, he's been a touchdown machine, and maybe he'll continue to dominate in that department.
However,
9 or more 4 times since 2013, and exactly 9 in 3 of the past 4 seasons. That's hard to find for sure.
That being said, over the past 2 seasons, 10 of his 18 touchdowns came in 4 games. Right. So, and not that those games don't count. They certainly do. But you had a 4 touchdown game and 3 2 touchdown games.
Yeah.
And then you take every other game that he played, and he had a total of 8 touchdowns in those remaining, whatever it is, 26, 28 games.
Totally fair. But I'll also say this, speaking of kind of crazy stats here, top 25 at wide receiver in end zone targets and average depth of target each of the past 5 seasons. So he's getting balls thrown to him near the goal line, and he runs a lot of deep routes, right?
Sure.
Kind of the opposite of Chenault, you know, like what we were just talking about. So big play opportunity here. Like him more non-PPR, like him in best ball leagues, like him in DFS at times, right? So there's going to be opportunities to use Jones. I just don't know if he's going to be super super consistent.
Yeah, yeah, and he's a talented player. He got pretty good money from the Jaguars this offseason. I believe it was 2 years and $18 million. But more than anything, like, the 3 wide receivers just excite me about the prospects of Trevor Lawrence sort of meeting or even exceeding expectations that we laid out earlier on in the show. I don't know how or where they find production at the tight end spot right now in the receiving game. Maybe the answer is they just don't. But they'd be an interesting team if one of those tight end trades comes to life at the end of the preseason, like if a David Njoku ever got moved from Cleveland, or if a Zach Ertz ever got moved from Philly, or if insert other disgruntled tight end gets moved at the end of the preseason. Jacksonville, to me, would be a natural landing spot just in terms of a need.
Yeah, I agree 100% right now. It's James O'Shaughnessy, probably going to get 2 or 3 targets a game.
Chris Manhurst, right?
They drafted Luke Farrell in like day 3.
I don't think
it'll be a priority.
Tim Tebow. How come we have not talked about Tim Tebow yet on this podcast?
That's right. It's a quarterback, right?
Oh,
retired baseball player?
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows? He might make the team, honestly.
At this point,
situation,
it would surprise me. It would surprise me a bit. At worst, practice squad for Tim Tebow would be my expectation, especially with larger practice squads this year, and I believe the same rules that applied last year, which basically made everybody eligible for the practice squad because teams wanted to have many, many players on the ready in case COVID impacted rosters last season. Jaguars, fun team. Looking forward to them. Go read Bill Barnwell's piece on ESPN Plus as he outlines why the Jaguars are the most likely of any of the 8 teams that finished last in their division last year to potentially win their division this season.
Wow.
And with that, we turn to social questions. Dan, you want to read a few for us right now?
I would love to do that. Right now, my computer is technically locked out. I can no longer access it, which means I've got the social questions as I stare at the camera here in front of me. This first one comes from Womack Aaron C. At least that's what my sheet says.
Yeah.
And the question is the Miles...
By the way, is your password still... I thought it was Hawkeye 26.
It still isn't
put it back in there.
Is the Miles Sanders, Boston Scott splitting carries talk legit, or is Miles Sanders a legit fantasy top 25 running back?
So, Mike, you want to attack this one that we talked about earlier on in the show?
Legit top 25, yeah, that's an easy yes for
yeah,
sure,
easy
right?
Yes,
I'm not worried about that. In fact, those carry distribution you heard about have kind of split apart, right? There was some a report they were splitting first team. Since then, that has kind of spread out. It's that. Don't get caught up in that. Come
Miles
on,
Sanders' like, job again. Yes. I think the biggest impediment could be if Jordan Howard gets some goal line carries, but not too
and he
worried
may get
about
cut
that.
With Kerryon Johnson there, no and Kenny doubt. Gainwell. You know,
yep. Kenneth Gainwell is kind of interesting, fun yeah. name in dynasty leagues.
I like it. All right, next one up comes from this one comes from Aussie NFL fan. Hurts boom potential. Can AJ Brown and Julio both hit with top 10 with Henry there? Anyone on the Jags even worth drafting in the first 8 rounds? Oh my gosh, that's 3 questions.
That's 3
in
for
one.
One special. All oh right, so
thanks,
the boom
TJ.
Potential. So I think we feel like the boom potential for Jalen Hurts is, I don't know, like again, I don't know that he has the ceiling of 5 or 6 or maybe even 8 quarterbacks.
If he's
ahead
the next NFL superstar and runs like he did last year, absolutely he,
if
does,
he does,
right?
Okay, I mean, interesting.
On
yeah.
a weekly basis, he has that upside, right? But on a season-long basis, that's the point.
That's where it's riskier to count on him as your quarterback,
yep. Can Julio Jones and A.J. Brown both hit top 10 with Henry there?
I don't think so.
Nope. I think A.J. Brown can. Julio Jones probably more like 15 to 18. And then is anybody on the Jaguars even worth drafting in the first 8 rounds?
Yes.
Yeah, one of the 2 wide receivers probably, right?
Yeah, the receivers. We talked about the running backs. Again, probably I think Robinson's the better value right now based on ADP. But, yeah, I mean, the answer is yes with the wide receivers for sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, this next question comes from literally Neil, I believe. Does ETN really, and that's in like air quotes, hurt Robinson that much? They seem like totally different roles.
I believe those are asterisks meant for emphasis.
Oh, asterisks. Yes.
Yeah, he does, right, Mike? I mean, just like the passing game could change dramatically. And like as great as James Robinson was last year. This is Travis freaking ETN. Like
right.
this guy's one of the best runners in college football ever, ever. Like right. one of the great running yeah. backs we've had, and I know there's been a ton, so maybe people will chirp back on that. But Travis Etienne scored a touchdown in more games in his college career than any other player in NFL history. He literally lived in the end zone while he was at Clemson.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Just crazy. Put it this way. I'll ask you this. Let's say one of those two guys was out for the season, right? Right
yep.
now. Would you move the other guy up significantly in your rankings?
Yeah, yes. James Robinson
100%.
Would be like a top 8 or 9 back.
Of course
back,
you
right?
would. So
or
the answer is... That answers itself, right? Of course. Of yep. course they hurt each other. Either one of them would get a lot more touches if the other was not there.
All right. Last question for the show. This one comes from the Big West. The question is, if Ertz is still on the team week 1, how much does he affect Dallas's ranking? I'm assuming he's talking about Dallas Goedert and not the entire Dallas Cowboys team.
That's
guys.
Probably a fair assumption, Daniel. I kind of like that vantage point right there.
Oh, I appreciate that.
It goes back to what we talked about earlier on in the show. Like, it hurts him a little bit, right? I mean, if Zach Ertz is gone, then I think we feel mm-hmm. like there's a much safer case for Dallas Goedert at his current ranking, which is tight end 8.
Yeah, no question. I'd feel a little bit
intuitive,
more confident.
Right?
His projection to be a little bit higher. I'd be more prone to look for him in the middle rounds. But it really hurts everyone because, honestly, I'd be bumping up Rager and Devonta Smith a little bit too. Or
sure.
maybe even Miles Sanders a pinch. If Ertz wasn't there, because if Ertz is there, he's going to play, and we saw that last season.
Weird one there. Just a weird one in general with Zach Ertz. He's been so much of that franchise, and he's been such a good player for such a long time. You kind of feel like he's the type of player that Philly will eventually want to do right by. He seems unhappy. I think that's no mystery there. He has showed up. This is mm-hmm. kind of reminding me of the opt-in that we're seeing around the NFL these days, right? It's so prohibitive to not show up to work financially that you got to kind of show up, take your lumps, be the... You know, be a good player, be a good teammate, and hope for the best. It feels like there's still at least a chance Zach Ertz could get traded this
How about Ertz for C.J. Henderson? That seems even, right?
Yeah, why not,
I
right?
mean, Ertz has way more catches in the NFL than
say,
Henderson
yeah,
does.
Yeah, Henderson has zero fantasy points in his career.
Exactly.
Ertz has many of them.
That's not Eagles bias at all. That makes
all,
perfect sense to me.
I kind of like what you're thinking right there, Mike. Interesting thought for the Eagles and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Of course, Jeremy Fowler of ESPN reporting that C.J. Henderson, their 9th overall pick last year, is available on the trading block. And that's going to do it for today. Thanks for watching Fantasy Focus Football. TMR is back tomorrow to help us break down his Washington football team as well as the Texans. Mike, great job. For Daniel, I'm Felix. See you in the host.